Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Open Mic Podcast, where no topic is off limits, and you never know who may stop by. Here we have real relevant conversations in a very approachable way. We have a fantastic show lined up for you today, and I'm excited to let you hear it. But before we start, if you wouldn't mind just heading on over to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a kind rating and review, it really does help. Also, if you could follow us on social media at Open Mic Podcast on Instagram, Brett's Open Mic on Twitter, and Brett Allen on Facebook. Also, be sure to head over to our website, www.theopenmicpodcast.net. That's www.theopenmicpodcast.net, where you can find all of the latest show information, past guest giveaways, and all kinds of fun and exciting things. So, without further ado, here's today's show. Hey everybody, Brett here with the Open Mic Podcast. Welcome into episode 79. And today I am chatting with comedian Bone Hampton. I have been looking forward to this interview for a long time. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you don't know who he is, then you definitely will by the end of this interview. And I think you should know who this guy is anyway, because he's hysterical. And he's just a great guy. He has a lot of funny things to say. Welcome to the podcast, Bone. It's good to have you here today.
Hey, Brett. Good to be here talking with you, man. Thank you for that intro. And thank you for addressing the people that saying, man, I don't know who Bone Hampton is. Who you got on here, Brett?
Well, I think most people know who you are because you recently appeared on America's Got Talent. And I want to talk about that for sure. But I want to rewind the clock a little bit and talk about your background and just how long have you been doing stand-up comedy? How long have you been a comic?
I made my first television appearance on a show called BET Comic View in 1999.
Okay, familiar with that for sure.
All the years that it took me before that, I don't think I really get credit for that, being a comic, you know. I had moved to L.A., and they like, until you get on TV, you ain't a real comic. I was like, wait a minute. I done got booed before. That counts. That has to count for me. They like, till you get on TV. So I was like, all right. So I always say since 1999, I was a professional comic then. They paid me money.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of comedians say that I've had on and have talked to that. Once you start getting paid, then that's when you're considered a comic. Would you still agree with that now, all these years later, or do you feel differently about that?
You know, it's funny. Yeah, I agree with that. My roommate in college was Mean Joe Green's son. Mean Joe Green, Hall of Famer with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, wow.
And we were at one of his family functions, and I was substitute teaching, you know, because that's how I was paying my bills. And he said, Bone, tell my sister what you do for a living. I was like, oh, I'm a stand-up comic. He's like, boy, you ain't no stand-up comic. How you pay your bill? I was like, oh, excuse me, Mr. Hall of Famer. Yeah, I substitute teach. And he told me then, he's like, whatever you do to pay your bills, that's what you do for a living. Until then, I was like, okay, I would never tell anybody again in life that I'm a stand-up comic until I can at least pay my cable bill with some stand-up money.
Right. And Jerry Seinfeld has said that a lot, too. He goes, well, I wouldn't consider myself as a stand-up comic or a comedian until I started getting paid. I was working, but I wasn't really considered a professional. So it makes sense that pretty much the consensus all across the board is if you can pay the cable bill or your cell phone bill, then you're a comedian, right? So that's pretty funny. I love that.
You know, it's funny because in the beginning, you don't think that. You think that all the comics that are saying that are being haters, and they just don't want to see you be great. They don't want to see you come up. But when you get on the other side, you start realizing, you know what? I see why they said that, you know. And you just try to tell a younger comic, like, respect the craft. Respect the game, and the game will respect you.
Yeah, I've heard that so many times. Now, I did have a question as a side note. There are folks that say there's a comedian, there's a comic, stand-up comic, that they're two separate things. What are your thoughts on that? I know Howie Mandel has said that several times. I always like to ask comics' perspective on that, because it seems that there is a little bit of a delineation. I don't know if that's just from one comedian to another, or if that's like an industry standard rule.
You know what? It's almost like a quarterback. You know, he's a pocket passer, or he's a running threat. You know, he's a Cam Newton, or he's a Dan Marino. Well, at the end of the day, they're both quarterbacks. Okay. They just got different styles of being quarterbacks. But I always get why they say that, and I would rather be known as a comedian, because what it is it's kind of a back-end way of saying you're not funny as a person, but you know how to do stand-up comedy.
Okay.
So if you ever have to get off your script, if you just have to kind of rock a room just based on you being funny, you're probably going to get in trouble. It's like that code when they're like, man, you're a great writer. You're a great writer. That's code for you're not funny, but you wrote some stuff that was cool.
So TV funny versus live funny. I could see that. That makes sense. Now, I saw you originally, this was a few years ago, I think, when you were traveling with Lecrae. I'm a huge fan of his. Love Lecrae. You guys were headlining together, and you have been working for a long time, clearly, based on what you just shared and still going forward. What pushed you to decide that, hey, I want to audition for America's Got Talent?
I saw comics that I knew, like, I don't know if everybody knows Taylor Williams. He was on there a few years ago, and he went pretty far. And I mean, he was headlining all across the country. And I knew Taylor back in L.A. when Taylor couldn't buy 2 minutes on stage. I mean, it was like hole in the wall. And they was like, nah, Taylor, you'll go up at 2 o'clock. And then I watched him on America's Got Talent. I'm like, man, this show can really change your life. And I mean, and there's some other things about it. You know, it's a risk reward situation, but I'm watching Taylor headline across the country. I'm like, man, this show can like change you, not overnight, but it can change you in a few episodes. So it was like, what is it going to hurt you? I mean, Simon can tell you the most horrible thing in the world, but that can just be his opinion as long as you don't just go up there and just kill yourself.
Sure.
So it was like, man, go ahead on. And plus, I live in Nashville now, so I'm not out in L.A., so I don't have the opportunities that I had when I was in L.A. So it was like, hey, man, here's an opportunity for something that could actually be a nice bump or spike in your career. So go for it.
Now, how many people did you have to see before you actually made it onto the live television portion where you come out, you introduce yourself, and then you perform in front of the judges? I've asked a few AGT performers questions, and I've always forget to ask that question, but I wanted to make sure and ask it for you because I always find it interesting that I'm assuming you don't just show up and you're live on television. There's probably a few steps before that.
It's just a few steps before that. Yeah. So there was about three levels that I had to go through, three different set of producers to get through before I finally got the okay that it was like, okay, well, here's this level. All right, we're going to pass you on to the second wave. Okay, the second wave is going to pass you on to the third wave, and the third wave will make that final decision if you get to get in front of the judges. And they were like, yep, we're getting you in front of the judges. So three different levels before I got to get in front of the judges.
Now, does that all take place in one day, or does that take place over
That's over time, yeah.
Okay, probably send in an audition tape before that, I would imagine.
The audition is the first wave, and then those people send you to another set of people, and then those people got another set of people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it could take like a month or so before you even say, okay, now we're putting you on live television.
Yes.
I always wondered that because some of the people that are on there, well, first of all, I back up and say I applaud you and anybody who has the nerve to go on a show like that, first of all. That's unbelievable because I could see it as a risk reward because it could either do really well for you or I don't know if it could do bad for you or just kind of leave things the same way that they were before. But it seems like it was a great experience for you. And again, It was awesome to watch you on there. You were hilarious, I think. And I want to ask you, yeah, of course. I think you're funny. I always have. But I want to ask you, you know, what were you thinking? What was going through your mind when you were, you've gone through all of the pre-auditions, I guess you could say, you know, all the levels. And now you're going on live television. You're getting there for tape day in LA. What was going on in your mind? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? That's a huge platform. I mean, literally millions and millions of people are watching you perform.
Well, with me, it was very interesting because I've been on The View several times. I mean, right. And I've sat at the table with Whoopi Goldberg, who is an EGOT. I've done a movie with Sandra Bullock and Bradley Cooper. So I've done and been successful with people of, you know, A-listers.
Okay.
You know? So I kept trying to convince myself, you know, you're going to perform in front of these A-listers, but it's not your first time being around A-listers. You know, I've worked with Sinbad, but all that talking and psyching me out didn't do nothing for me. When I walked out on that X and saw Simon Cowell and Mel B and Heidi Klum and Howie Mandel, I was like, oh, there's nothing you can do to prepare yourself for this.
This is a lot.
Sitting at the table at The View, you would think would be more intimidating to have Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar and Elizabeth Hasselbeck at the time. These women that's like, we're going to eat you alive if you say something that even remotely sounds male chauvinist.
Sure.
That should be more intimidating. And the thing about sitting at the table with the ladies, though, they really wanted to see me succeed. So it wasn't as intimidating because they was like, we want to see you succeed, but if we have to throw you to the wolves in order to make a good TV show, we will. But we want to see you succeed first. But to go out there and watch these judges that are like, yeah, we'd love to see you be the next great star, but we don't know yet. So you kind of got to give us what you got so we can make a decision. And in my mind, I'm like, I've done TV and been successful doing stand-up on TV before, so this is not me asking myself to do something that I have never done before. But having those four just looking at you and know that Simon makes his money from ripping people to shreds, it was like, oh, man, you got to give it your all and just leave everything on this stage right now. And so basically, after I got my first laugh at a point where I thought I was supposed to get a laugh, then it just became just regular stand-up.
I find stand-up comedy so interesting. I've talked to a few comics already, and I just find what you do, and I say this in a very respectful way, it's the most unusual thing that a person can do, I think, because it's just an enigma. I watch it, and I do a podcasting, and I go, okay, I could probably do that. But then I watch, like, you or somebody else go up there, and then you just kill it. And I'm like, there's no way I could do that because I don't know what it is about it. I just find stand-up comedy so intriguing and so interesting how you can go into an audience, whether it's America's Got Talent or, you know, a comedy club that holds 150 people and just perform. And there has to be like this feeling of greatness when you can make people laugh. It just has to be the most fantastic feeling. I can only imagine. Do you feel more pressure? I mean, obviously you have the experience, but you feel more pressure than you would typically maybe? So when you went back the second time, was the pressure level a lot higher because now you have to top what you did before?
Okay, this one made the pressure, and I don't know how much I'm legally supposed to be able to say this part.
But, understood.
But I like you, Brett. I like the podcast, so I'm going on and take the risk. They knock at my door, they're probably going to knock at your door too, so be prepared. It's, you know, and this is whenever you're doing TV, you have to get whatever jokes you're going to do, you have to get them approved.
Oh, okay,
so,
interesting.
So you don't have the luxury of a stand-up comedy club or just any old live show where, okay, this is what you're thinking about doing. But if you start that and you realize, oh, wait, this is not that kind of audience, let me go this direction, you can do that on the spot in a live stand-up show. And that's what helps comics usually be able to always have a good show, because you can adjust if you need to.
Sure.
And the longer time you have, the longer you have to kind of get them where you want them to, where you want them to be. You know, you sure. follow different type of situations. Like, you know, one time I was at the Comedy Store, and Matthew McConaughey was there with John Bon Jovi.
Oh,
and
wow.
So Matthew McConaughey had been heckling all the comics. It was a clean room. It was a clean night. And he had been heckling all the comics, and none of the comics, you know, this was like 15, 17 years ago. It might have even been longer than that. And all the comics that were trying to be clean, they weren't that good. And I was one of the best because I was one of the few clean comics. And when I went up, the room was so jacked up because Matthew McConaughey had heckled the comics so bad that nobody could finish their set. My goal was like, Bone, just be funny enough that everybody's laughing so hard that they don't even hear Matthew McConaughey. But what I realized, the room was so messed up. It was so jacked up that it didn't matter, because they was like, we can't laugh because we know Matthew's about to mess it up. So I had to change my whole game plan in the middle of my show, which was just 45 seconds in, when I realized you're not going to be able to do your jokes. You got to address what's happening. And so a couple of guys before me had like stripped down to a Superman costume or something. So I said, hey, yeah, right. I'm like, I'm not taking my clothes off. I got jokes. And Matthew McConaughey's like, we're sure glad you won't. And the crowd was like, see, there it is. And I was like, hey, man, why can't you sit up in the club and act like an A-list celebrity the way John Bon Jovi is? But I guess that's what you do when your movies bomb at the box office. You got to come up here to a C-plus room and try to heckle us C-minus comics to make yourself feel better. And that turned the room. And the room was like, yes, somebody finally got him. And he was like, all right, rah, rah. I was like, hey, man, you better. He started acting like he was rushing the stage. And I was like, man, you better sit down. Instead of the killer Mockingbird, it's going to be the killer Matthew McConaughey up in here. Don't play with me. And I mean, it was like it. And because I had the luxury of doing whatever I needed in that room to make the room the way I wanted it to be, I could do that. And so with America's Got Talent or any TV show, they're like, no, you got to say what we've agreed on that you're going to say.
Interesting.
And if you go off script, you can find yourself in a world of trouble from all kind of standpoints. I mean, it always goes back to, you know, Janet Jackson and that Super Bowl halftime show. And I'm like, look, I ain't got Janet Jackson money or her career to afford to have a Super Bowl halftime situation where they like, yeah, we don't trust Bone on TV no more. He don't do what we agree. So with all that said, the bit that they wanted me to do was a bit that was 9 years old that I don't even do anymore.
Okay.
And I kind of told the producer, like, I ain't did the joke in 9 years, because the joke had to do with me not dating women who had kids because I didn't have kids. Well, my son is 9. So I'm where did y'all even find this joke at? They're like, yeah, that's the one the producer wants you to do. Wow. I was like, well, I got this joke that's viral on Dry Bar. I got 1.8 million hits on it about the dog named Muffin that don't bite. Yeah, Heidi likes dogs, so we don't want you to do anything to make her mad.
Wow.
Okay, well, I got diabetes, so that's kind of personal, and I do that bit about, you know, when you see food you ain't supposed to eat, you got to make a decision. Is that worth getting my foot cut off of? Oh, it's red velvet cake? Then I limp with it. They like, nope. Preacher Lawson did a bit last year about a girl limping, and it kind of split the room, so we don't want you to do that. I'm like, but those are the jokes I'm doing now that's working. They're like, yeah, we need you to do this joke about you don't date women that don't have kids.
Interesting.
Like, okay. And so the second time was very nerve-wracking because this was an older joke that wasn't as true to me now. And it was like, you got to figure out a way to kind of pull this joke off and put enough Bone Hampton in it that the joke don't matter. Well, I don't know how much you watched the show this year, but there's a little poltergeist girl on there named Sacred Liana.
Yeah. I've been watching all through up until now. Yeah, for sure.
So Sacred Rihanna went up right before me. So I go out on stage and the whole audience is looking at me like, we like you, Bone, but that girl just brought a dead girl out of a dollhouse.
Yeah.
And we don't know what to do right now. I'm like, and I'm supposed to do comedy?
Oh, man.
Like, yeah, we ain't. So all of that on my second spot was just like, you know what? If we were in a regular show, I could address it, but we're not. This is a, you know, this is America's Got Talent. And you got 90 seconds to try to convert a room that just saw a dead girl jump out of a dollhouse and chase Mel B all backstage into, hey, y'all ready to laugh now? They're like, no, we are so not. So
interesting.
That's what made it hard.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's just interesting to know that. So basically they tell you what you can and can't do. Or if you come to them and you have a set, and reality TV is like that as well. I've interviewed a reality TV star not too long ago, and she was telling me, she's like, she did this thing with Exhibit, and they made her rap for him, and it made her look really dumb. And she's like, well, that's not really what happened. And she explained the whole story. So I get it. I get it. But I have to say, you're funny, and I'm excited to see what else you've got coming down the pike. You're funny. You've got a great spirit about you, and I think you did an amazing job. And I'm really excited to see what's next for you. Where do you come up with your material? How do you write your jokes? What's your process?
Well, let me tag what we just finished too, because I want to make sure everybody knows. They gave me a lot of airtime in the green room talking to all the other contestants. And I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that.
Oh, good.
Because, again, that falls in the category of, we're not just concerned about can you be funny on stage regurgitating jokes. Are you a funny person? Are you entertaining when you're not there? And so a lot of people have been like, look, we didn't get to see enough of your stand-up, but we saw you when you were interacting with everybody, and it seems like America's Got Talent really like you because they kept showing you mm-hmm. in the background. Can you give us some tape to see more because we're interested? And then I sent them the tape of the stuff I want to, and it's been a lot of work come out of it. So,
well, that's great,
even
man.
Though, you know, that night happened with the actual 90 seconds on stage, it's so much more to the show than just the 90 seconds on stage, and I have been a beneficiary of the so much more of the show. So
well deserved, my friend. Yeah,
throw that on there. I get my material from real life because I feel like I gotta be able to relive whatever it is that I thought was funny on stage each time without having to try to remember, like, okay, now what about this was funny, or what fictitious situation did I make? It's like, no, I'm just reliving it. So then the joke doesn't get old to me because I'm like, okay, I don't even remember what that feeling was. Now I got to try to remember that feeling or emotion. It's like, okay, stand up is not acting. You know,
no.
That's an acting note to try to figure out, okay, what's this feeling? They just told me my best friend died. And I'm like, my best friend ain't dead. I talked to him 5 minutes ago. Yes, this is acting. No. It's like, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he died. Okay, I'm not trying to do that in stand-up night after night after night. So it has to be something that's real to me. It has to be a feeling that I feel that is real. And it's funny because sometimes it'll happen. Like, I'm terrified of dogs, and I hate when people don't walk their dogs with a leash, when they just think their dog is so cool, and I'm walking down the street and their dog ain't got no leash, like their dog is in their front yard. I'm like, I'm trying to get some exercise, and you got your big Doberman Pinscher in the front yard, and I'm trying to figure out, is he's gonna attack me? And so that's a real feeling for me. So the video of the dog named Muffin and Don't Bite that went viral for me, that's exactly what it is. It's that feeling that I get of the more scared I am, the more your dog gonna feel like he needs to come let me know why I should be scared. Sure. And I know I'm supposed to stand up to him, but I'm scared. So I don't like to stand up to stuff that I'm scared of, for real. I like to try to get out of the way. So as long as the joke is that real feeling, I can relive it. So something may happen when I'm with my friends or something, and in my mind I start trying to figure out, is this funny because we all know each other, or would this be funny in a room full of strangers? To a group of people that don't know anything about me, is this part of life still funny to them? And after you've been doing comedy for so long, I don't know, I would say somewhere around 5-7 years, your mind starts to work like that. You can be having a great time with your friends and in the same time processing, is this for the stage or is this just a great time with my friends? And when you're younger, what happens is you try to take that to the stage not knowing that, hey, that was funny to you and your friends because y'all had 5 years of setup for that. But these strangers, they have no idea where you came from. So that doesn't matter to them. And then you standing on stage feeling dumb, like, what happened?
Interesting. I could see that because you have to know your room, obviously. And yep. I think it's so intriguing to just work through that process for you mentally and go, okay, is this funny to me and my friends? Is it like an inside joke, or would this bring a room full of people into laughter and tears because it's just funny overall? And I think that's why you're so good at what you do. I wanted to ask you, you know, we mentioned working clean, and I want to talk about that because I prefer that personally. I mean, I like all kinds of comedy, but when a comic works clean, it's great because I can enjoy it with family. And I mean, I love all the greats, right. Chappelle and all those guys. Yeah. They're amazing. Chris Rock is just so good. But what is your main message that you're trying to get across to your audience? Like, what is your elevator pitch? Like, when you get up there to do a 30, 45 minute set, like, what are you hoping that the audience walks away from that they may have learned about you or about your comedy or something like that?
The main thing is I don't want them to have that sour aftertaste. I don't want people leaving but still feeling some kind of sideways about themselves, some kind of awkwardness. So the reason that I stay clean, now I started clean because I was scared my mama would pop up somewhere and be like, ain't nobody raised you like that. I'm like, oh, mama, what you doing in the club? But after I had started, I stayed clean because I really want to respect my audience. I want my audience to never leave feeling like, man, I had a good time, but, you know, it was the times he said some things and it was a little awkward. I was on my first date, or it was a little awkward. Sure. Because, and I never want them to feel it. I always want them to feel like I don't have to worry about listening to Bone Hampton, having a good time, and then worry about him throwing me a sucker ball, throwing me a sucker pitch, a sucker punch, throwing me something that didn't even really have to do with what I was already laughing at. Like, he could have did that without giving me a shot of tequila. I was fine with the virgin pina colada. It was good. Why did he? And so what I want the audience to leave with is not having any kind of sour aftertaste, nobody feeling like they had to get picked on in order for me to do a show, nobody being nervous about, I hope he don't look this way because,
oh, yeah.
he may say something about me that I'm already insecure about. I am a very sensitive dude. Like, I do not like to play any of the roasting, none of that. When I was in L.A. and I was kind of coming to my own, I remember I was at a club one time. There's this Latino comic named Jeff Garcia. He a big dog in the Latino world. And me and him was cool, and they was getting ready to do your mama jokes. on stage. He's like, Bone, come up here. I'm like, no. He's like, what? I'm like, nah, man, I don't do your mama jokes. He's like, man, come on up here, man. We just playing. I'm like, no. And so afterwards, he's like, man, why you didn't want to? I was like, cause y'all might say something about my mama that's true. And then all the laughing's over. It's like, you don't know what my mama's shortcomings is. So you might say something that hit a nerve. And I've always just been like, man, I don't like sarcasm. I don't like that your joke is funny because I either believed you or you making me feel like a dum-dum. And that's where your laughing coming. I'm like, how you gonna laugh because you making me feel like a dum-dum? Like, you making me feel like my question is dumb. And all I was trying to ask you was, do you want to go to Kroger or Publix? That's all I was trying to ask you. And now I'm dumb? So I don't like anything that makes the person feel less than in order for the laugh to come. So I'm big on that. Now, with that said, if it's something that the person can laugh at on their own, and I'm not talking about nervous laughter, like it's something that they know, then it's fine because it's all in fun. But if the person can't laugh at it, you know, it's like if you come to the comedy show and you got on a yellow hat that's 12 inches tall, that's what I'm going to start with. Like, okay, so you know you wore that hat to the show, right?
Yeah.
Like, didn't nobody accidentally put that on your head? Like, you know that you wore that hat.
That's fine.
Okay, so as long as you know you wore the hat, now we can move forward because it's not my fault. You wore it. Three people behind you can't see. That ain't their fault. That's your fault. So you got to deal with the, you know, it's that type of thing.
Interesting.
But if it's somebody that, you know, it's something that could easily be an insecurity of theirs, you know, like you kind of could tell when somebody wearing something and they think it's a good look. And it's like, of course you can find something wrong with it, but it's like, you know what? I think they think that's a good look. So for me to make fun of that, I don't think they came in expecting to be made fun of that. Like if you see somebody and they wearing, you know, horizontal striped pants with vertical striped shirt, you can kind of look at them and be like, I don't think they know they wasn't supposed to do that. So I'm going to leave them alone. If anything, I'm going to tell them how good they look. Because if they wore that and they don't think they did nothing wrong, then they probably have been picked on in life. And I'm here to make you feel better about who you are. Because I'm the guy with the mic. I have power. If I tell you you look good in front of everybody, that's going to empower you versus making you feel less. That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. And I can do it in fun. You know, it's like, okay, I see. You thought you was ready for prom tonight, huh? You was like, Carolyn didn't act right in the prom in 95, and you was coming to the comedy club tonight, and you was going to relive your prom with Bone the right way. I hear you. Carolyn, you can go kick rocks because what's your name, George? George is on fire tonight. George, I don't know who you going home with tonight, but I hope you pray first because you're going to do something the Lord going to make you regret. Boy, you, woo, you. And now George is feeling good about him. Everybody's laughing in fun instead of laughing at George.
Sure. So positive crowd work then, which I like that.
Yes.
I find that very cool. Now, I wanted to ask, would you consider yourself a Christian comic? I know that you're a believer and I love that. Or, you know, there's that, it's kind of a weird thing where like you've got the Angela Johnsons and the Taylor Tomlinsons. You know where I'm going with the question, but I gotta ask.
I know exactly where you're going.
You know, the Tim Hawkins or the John Crist. Like, it's, well, no, I'm a comic that's a Christian. I mean, or are you just, do you consider, I'm not trying to pinhole you, but I'm just curious, like, you know, do you consider yourself just a comic and that's it? Because I know you were hosting that event in Florida, I believe it was, which is awesome. And I was wondering, you know, where do you find yourself in that whole spectrum?
I'm a Christian comic.
Okay.
And I make no bones about
that's cool.
it. I don't have no problem with it. And it's funny because the reason I laugh so hard at it, because I hear people try their best. My peers, I hear them try to talk themselves out of this because there's the stigma that comes along with it, and they don't want to be in this pigeonhole. But I put it in the same category of, hey, what do you do to pay your bills? Do you do stand-up comedy to pay your bills, or do you wait tables to pay your bills? Yeah, you're a waitress right now. That's what you are. You ain't a stand-up comic yet. And so I look at my peers, and I'm like, do you make your money doing jokes in churches, or are you working all improvs? Oh, you're doing all the churches. You're a Christian comic. Stop acting like you ain't. No, I ain't no Christian comic. I'm a comic. There's a Christian. No, Angela Johnson is a comic.
Yes.
The rest of y'all are Christian comics.
Sure.
I looked at all your dates. You had First Baptist from the 1st through the 38th. So don't act like you had First Baptist Friendship with Mount Juliet, Mount Olive. Don't even try to act like that ain't who and what you are. That is who and what you are.
Cool.
I don't see you in the clubs. So, you know, and the thing about it is, comedy is like, Christian comedy is like every other comedy.
Sure.
If you can make people laugh in whatever rooms, then you go to those rooms and work.
Yeah.
If what you do doesn't fit the rooms, so what? It's like Shonda Pierce, I go out on tour with her from time to time.
Yeah.
And she averages 2,500 people to 4,000. And we were at Zany's one night here in Nashville, and Sinbad was there, me and Sinbad friends. She wanted to meet Sinbad. And she was like, Sinbad, won't you let me go out and open for you? And Sinbad was looking like, okay, I don't know you. You Bones friends, so you kind of get a pass. And then when she leaves, Sinbad was like, who is that? I'm like, Sinbad, she sells out everywhere she goes. She's from 2,500 to 4,000. They're like, why is she asking to open for me? I was like, Sinbad, for some reason, Christian comics don't feel that their 2,500, 4,000, however many people are validation because it's in the church.
Interesting.
He was like, man, 2,500 people.
Anywhere.
That, he said, they paid tickets? Yeah, I'm like, yeah, man, they paid tickets. $25, $35, $50 VIP. He was like, man, wherever you get paid tickets is where. I'm like, Sinbad, I'm trying to tell them, but that, I mean, they deal with this. And I think part of it is never being in the trenches with other regular secular comics to realize that it's a choice that you make.
Sure.
Like, I started out with Cat Williams, Sherry Shepherd, the Plastic Cup Boys with Kevin Hart, Gabriel Iglesias. So I've been in the rooms. I'm in the rooms when I'm in L.A. with all the secular successful comics. And we all got the same, you know, we all know how this game works.
Sure.
One day you're in a room and you got 50 people, but you get on the right show. The next day you got 5,000 people.
Interesting.
And yes, it has to do with your talent, but a lot of times it has to do with the opportunity and being put in the right position at the right time. So nobody really trips on you of like, oh, he's a Christian comic, so that means that his 2,500 people that came don't count. It's like 2,500 is 2,500.
For sure. I love the answer, and I think that's fantastic, and I was having a little bit of fun, but I like your perspective on that. You're at Mount Calvary Baptist from the 1st through the 31st. You're a Christian comedian. You know, it's like,
come on,
it's
man,
like
come
Jeff
on.
Foxworthy. You might be a redneck. You're a redneck. You don't pretend like you're not, you know. I have to tell you, I just find it interesting. And I think that's what makes you so unique and so cool, is that you do own that and you don't mince words about it, but people still give you the same respect. I think you get more respect, honestly, because, you know, Angela Johnson was saying, I saw her and I was talking to her and she's like, you know, it's crazy. All my Christian friends think that I'm too edgy, and all my non-Christian friends don't think I'm edgy enough. So she's like, I don't know what to do, because she's like, I can't please everybody. But, you know, I just think that if you're true to yourself and what you're doing and anything, really, I think you're going to have success, which I think is awesome. So I wanted to ask you one last question. you know, if you weren't doing this, what else would you do? I ask this to everybody. If you weren't doing comedy, what would you see yourself doing?
Oh, I would be in a classroom being a teacher so fast. Oh, I love being in the classroom with students.
That's cool.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And if anything ever happened to my stand-up career, I get right back in the classroom. I think that a lot of times the kids in class need more than somebody than just teaching them how to count and how to do their alphabets, you know. And I always felt like there are three different types of people in the classroom. There's the top, there's that group of kids that's going to do right no matter what. They don't need attention. They don't need you pushing them. They're just going to do right. And there's a group of kids that I don't care how much love and attention you give them, they're just going to do bad.
Yeah.
That's just what they determine to do. And there's the group that's in between. And depending on the push that they get, that's what they're going to end up doing. Mm. And I'm always concerned about them because I know if, you know, it may be just one more, hey, you're a good kid. Hey, I love you. Hey, I think you can be something. Just one more of those statements can make them go to college and get their college degree. And one less can make them decide to go join a gang. And I think that group is just unserviced group.
Sure.
Like, I don't think people realize that group of kids is like, whatever the next thing somebody tell me, that's where I'm going to be pushed because I'm torn.
Mm.
And it's like, hey, just give that kid just a little bit more. If they made an 89 in the last test, they made an 85, just tell them, hey, man, that's 4 points better than last time. You are on the upswing, man. Good for you. Just do that. Because that might be the day that they was thinking about going to go rob the liquor store.
Mm.
And they like, you know what? I'm not going to rob the liquor store today. Why? Mr. Hampton told me I was on the upswing. So I'm going to leave it alone.
Wow.
And that's the day.
Well, that is awesome. I just love that message. I love you, man. This has been such an honor to do this. Do you have any plans to come to the Bay Area anytime soon? Because if you do, I would love to come see you. It's been a while. Are you coming out this way anytime soon on a tour or anything that you can talk about?
Where exactly are you
I'm
at?
I'm near like San Francisco, Sacramento. So I'm surrounded by...
Man, I'm supposed to be doing something up there in January.
Okay.
And so once we get that locked in, I think it's a date night comedy show.
Okay.
Too. Once we get that locked in, I would definitely reach back out
Please
to you
do.
And make sure. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where can people find you if they want to check you out, your comedy on YouTube, obviously? What's your website? And we'll make sure that it goes into the podcast show notes as well.
BoneHampton.com is the website, and all social media is just at BoneHampton.
Well, folks, we have been chatting with BoneHampton. It's been a fun conversation. I haven't laughed this hard. It's been a long day, so laughter really is good medicine. I believe that to be true. And
Yes.
I appreciate it. Well, Bone, thank you so much, my friend.
Hey, Brett. Hey, man, you're a great interviewer,
thank
man.
You.
This has been a lot of fun,
thank you.
Man.
I appreciate
thank you,
that.
Man. I hope you keep this going,
oh,
man.
I will.
This is a great podcast. Thank you for letting me be a part of it.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure. Well, folks, that's it. Thank you, Bone, for being part of the show. And we look forward
yes,
to seeing more and what you got for us. You have a good day, sir. Thank you very much.
You too, man. Thank you.
What's up, everybody? It's Brett Allen from the Open Mic Podcast. And first of all, I want to say thank you so much for listening and being a part of the show. The fact that you listen, that you download, and that you subscribe every single day blows my mind. And from the very bottom of my heart, I want to extend a thank you. Now, Anchor.fm, the company that supports the podcast and that hosts it, has offered a brand new way for you to support my show, the Open Mic Podcast. You can now sponsor the program monthly. There are three ways that you can do this. There are three levels: 99 cents per month, $4.99 per month, and $9.99 per month. And the cool thing is you don't even have to have the Anchor app to do it. Wherever you listen to this show, there is a link that you can go to, and it will take you to the anchor.fm/ the Open Mic Podcast homepage. From there, you can pick whatever level you want to support the show. It's that simple. And the cool thing is you can either do it once or you can do it reoccurring. It's totally up to you. The other thing about this that is super cool is that it's tax deductible as well. Doing a podcast can be expensive and there are things that come up, like new equipment, new studio upgrades, new microphones, new music, all of that cost money. And I would absolutely love to partner with you on the podcast. Just head over to www.anchor.fm/theopenmicpodcast. Click the link. It's that simple. Thank you so much for listening and for your support. Cheers and be well.